from the Findlay Toyota Studios. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company on a Wednesday. Company today is Alex White. Griffin is here as well. We're both in our Findlay Toyota Studios and our Kansas City Studios. We've got studios everywhere. Alex, how you doing?
When you traveled a little early this time, huh? Not traveling with the team?
I traveled a little bit early. Well, as you know, last time you guys got kind of jobbed on a Friday show because, well, there were some travel delays and those things happen. So I usually try to get out of town a little bit earlier. It's funny, I actually saw UNLV will travel tomorrow for the football game in Kansas City. They'll travel on Thursday. I actually saw some of the dudes from the program, not players, but some of the ops people were on the same plane as I was because they come out a little bit early. It actually amazes me, and we can get into this as the show moves along. I've tried to describe to people, and we know there's, you know, 100-plus Division I programs. The moving city that is a football program, first of all, they send a tractor-trailer ahead of everyone at the beginning of the week, and then just hundreds and hundreds of people are on the road trying to put things together and make sure it all works. It's pretty crazy. I got to ask you guys, coming right out of the gates, and Griffin, pop on. I am going to sound like a complete pansy on this one. I don't know what it was like by like 9 or 10 in the morning in Vegas, because I got up pretty early and got on an early flight. But, and I forgot the sound of the picture. The smoke this morning was unbelievable. And I got to tell you, like, I am not a complainer. I really don't get sick. Like, I still, I don't know if it's in my head. I feel like I still feel it. Like, there's, I don't know. It was thick this morning. It was not, I don't know if it was, like, it's too strong saying it wasn't easy to breathe. Were you affected by it at all?
I was not, but I did drive to work about 7:30, and it was really bad. And the sun was covered by it and very red. But no, I didn't really even think about it. So don't put that in my head now.
No. Tell me. Just go ahead and say it. Toughen up, Buttercup. Griffin, you're affected by it. You're kind of a soft guy.
Yeah, a little bit. But at the same time, I'm a lot like these, you know, the Instagrammers and the TikTokers. I was just like, oh, that gorgeous sun. I'm gonna take a picture of it, put it on my story, get some clout. So I, like, 50% was a little sick, 50% enjoyed the views.
All right. Well, we got a big game coming up, so hopefully the team is all good. It does actually call into question what it was like. I don't think it was too bad last night, but they're actually practicing. UNLV's practicing at night to try to get acclimated to the night start time. And there's a whole Friday thing we can get into about these Friday night games that change things an awful lot in terms of the schedule, and you got a short week. So, Alex, today's going to be a big day. Every Wednesday and Thursday are going to be big days of us prepping for the football weekend. You are on a bunch of different contests. We are in Circa Million as a team. I know you're in another contest around town. Are you also in Westgate? I think you're in something, what, at the South Point? Are you in Nugget as well?
I'm in Golden Nugget as well. Okay. And the Review Journal, small little contest that they do. So, but hey, our team did very well. I actually thought it was a perfect 5-0. It took me a second to realize.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good.
We just missed out.
Start.
We just missed out. Now, you're in the VSiN Invitational with like $25,000 on the line. You were invited. It was invite only. That's college and pro. You picked 7 games in that one?
Yes, 7 games in that one.
Okay. Week 1?
I got a little too cute. I was trying not to use all the same plays, right? So I used some totals that kind of hurt me. So I went 3-4 the first week, used all 7 college. Plan to do that again, if I'm being honest, because
like
NFL
that.
Is just tough. But, yeah, so 3-4, I'm thinking that's not too bad. I just need a nice 6-1 week here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been in those contests before, and you do these contests for real. Bad weeks need to be 3-4. You can't have an 0-7. You can't do a 1-6. So sometimes you get out of a week and you're like, man, I just didn't nail those. What got you? Was there a total you played where you're like, what the hell was I thinking on this one?
Yeah, there was. It was actually the Pittsburgh game, because I even went over a bad number. But still, I had that total made a little bit higher than what they were giving. And I'm like, after I watch that game, it's going to fly over. You know, it's kind of influenced from the first week and watching Pittsburgh and their lack of defense. So that one killed me. Just in the standpoint of, like, I shouldn't have done that. I took another over too, though. I can't remember what it was right now, but did not get there. Oh, it was actually Utah and Baylor, which Cam Risey went out of the game.
Right.
That might have changed things, but can't handicap that.
Exactly. And I'm making you go through it again 3 days later. So, like, you already put it in the rearview mirror, like, hey, dude, I was done on Saturday. Leave me alone on the college games. We're going to start looking at the pro games in a little bit. And week two, I think, is overreaction week. But it is interesting. Almost every trend I'm seeing on the NFL is don't freak out, which is kind of my approach. And as bad as some teams looked, week two will always deliver on dogs, especially dogs that had a really rough time in week one. But it does take some gumption, you know, to back like the Panthers or someone else who got blown off the field. It's not easy. So looking at NFL week two, how do you handle it?
You're 100% correct. Not overreacting. Did update all the teams, though, with my own ratings and made new numbers for this week and then just see how it goes. But there were quite a few favorites that covered in that first week, so I don't think we have to be too scared to lay the points. But
right.
Panthers is tough, especially because the Chargers are going there, and I wasn't overly impressed with the Chargers. But I do trust that coach, and so I think that one I'm going to stay away from the dog.
Okay, we also, when we're looking at games to handicap, you also got to look at where the team is from a mental standpoint. Is there anything getting in the way of focus? And I don't want to go crazy, and I don't think we did yesterday when we talked about, last 2 days, when we talked about the Tyreek Hill news, right? We wanted more information to come out. By the way, Tyreek Hill, I think, extended an olive branch today, so we'll see if that's accepted. But we can get into Tyreek with our legal insider, Justin Watkins, in a little bit. Do you factor in the Tyreek Hill news when considering the Dolphins, frankly, in a game where, you know, Miami has a decent fan base, but they also, they have a tough time combating when the Jets and the Bills come down there, and especially Bills fans. So this won't be like an 80-20 Miami crowd. It'll probably be a 50-50 crowd, and then you got the Tyreek Hill pain in the ass stuff. So do you want to roll with the Dolphins here still?
I do. I do want to roll with the Dolphins. I think there's other factors that make it a stronger play for Miami. And I know it's a little scary, especially because I've been talking about this a lot, too. So once you tell people too much that you really like a play, it's usually a bad sign. But I think that they're going to win this game. And, I mean, 2 or 2.5, they can cover that easily with the field goal. So, I mean, really looking at both these teams, they were lucky to get that first win, right? I mean, Miami over the Jags, but they were the better team in the second half. Can't take that away from them. And then Buffalo just got into a shootout with Arizona. And I think Miami's defense is much better than the Cardinals. So,
Alex, but you've got big names out for the Dolphins.
Are you talking running backs?
Do they need a run game?
They do need a run game. I think Achane will still play. He did practice today. So, and the next two guys up next are pretty good. So I think they'll be okay. It's going to be a good game. Don't get me wrong. It's a division game. The Bills have won plenty of times against the Dolphins in the last 10 that they've played each other. They won both last year. But I also love that revenge factor because, you know, the Dolphins have had this game circled. I mean, it was the last game of the regular season last year, which forced them to tie in the division, and then the Dolphins had to go to Kansas City, and their season's over after that. So I think they've had this game circled.
The Fish have Jeff Wilson behind Mostert and Achane. Wilson's been a good fill-in in the past, so I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. And obviously, if Tyreek Hill can get to the stadium and not get pulled over and, you know, slow down a little bit and roll down your window, if everyone gets to the stadium and, again, be focused, and the Dolphins certainly have a good chance in the game. So, all right, so there you go. Coming out of the gates. I'm telling you, we're going to go against the grain on a lot of these picks. Coming up, though, we're going to check in Kansas City. As I'm hanging out here in KC before the UNLV game in a couple of days. It's on the road, obviously, taking on Kansas in the Kansas City area instead of Lawrence. They're going to be playing at the soccer stadium here. Let's do a giveaway. 364-1100, 364-1100, Aviators in El Paso. Alex will be out there as one of the folks who's the MC at these games. It's the final homestand. Are you sad about this? Are you sad that the season is over? Did it go by quickly?
It's bittersweet. I wouldn't say it went by quickly. Baseball is a very long season.
And it is Vegas, so it is hot as Hades at these games sometimes.
It is, but it's a ton of fun. I mean, I'm very blessed to get to work out there and work one of my jobs at a baseball field.
Well, it's fireworks night, and it will be cooler. We know that. Naturally, it's going to get cooler here in the next couple of Fridays. So fireworks night, final homestand, first pitch is 7:05. You can get your tickets at aviatorslv.com. Aviators have had a monster season in terms of attendance, and this is your chance to get some free tickets from Griffin. 364-1100, 364-1100, Aviators tickets for a couple of Fridays from now, fireworks night. Up next, though, we're going to check in with a good old buddy. He was an assistant coach for UNLV. Then he was one of our basketball insiders. He's coaching with Marvin Menzies out here in Kansas City as an assistant coach of the KC Ruse. Coach Joe is on the way.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
Alex White is here. It's Cofield. Alex in our Findlay Toyota Studios. I am in the Petro Kansas City Studios. This part of the show is presented by our friends at Good Sense Stubs, or Subs, celebrating 35 years since they were born and bred right in Kansas City. Las Vegas going to Kansas City for all your tailgating needs on Friday, Thursday. Just go to GoodSenseStubs.com. GoodSenseStubs.com. Coach Joe is with us. He's coaching the Ruse. He's in the Summit League, former UNLV Rebel assistant coach. What's up, Joe?
Man, it's great to hear your voice. I heard that song. I started getting chills. I didn't know if that was our fight song, or I couldn't remember, but it's ours. That was awesome.
I was wondering, I actually didn't roll in Griffin on this one and tell him that Coach Joe, you could have like nine different, what is it, Angelo State? Can we have the theme from the band from Angelo State?
That's the same as Ohio State, so you wouldn't want to do that. But
is that right?
Tennessee State was probably the best music that I ever had when I was coaching. They could really get down with them Tennessee State, historically black institution bands. We had some great music back then.
Nice. Very nice. All right, Joe. Well, let's talk a little about the KC Ruse, and then I want to get your feel for Kansas City. And I'm out here for the UNLV football game against KU. You can give me a little reaction. I've been paying attention to what's going on with Barry Odom and UNLV. But first off, with you and Marvin Menzies, you know, second season was pretty solid. You guys did well in the Summit. Tell me about the roster build, though, because as I look at the roster, it looks like a typical Marvin roster over the years. There's some influence from outside the country.
Yeah, there has been. And to be honest with you, we did something last year that had never been done at the school. We finished in second place. We had a great run. And what we were able to do, only nine schools in the country were able to do, and that's return our entire starting five. We had a few guys on our team. We took almost every award in the conference. We took the Coach of the Year, the Freshman of the Year, the Newcomer of the Year, the Sixth Man of the Year, the Defensive Player of the Year. We took all those awards. And those guys all decided they could have left and got more money somewhere else, or money, pretty good money, but they decided to stay and try to do something that's never happened here in Kansas City, and that's go to an NCAA tournament. So we are excited about our group. We return our top six. We had a few really good pieces, and the program is really in good shape, and we're looking forward to the future.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the build that you guys had to undertake, because I was looking back at the history of the program. It's been around for a long time, I think since the late 50s, and there just really hasn't been a lot of winning seasons. I mean, literally in 50-plus years.
No, there hasn't. They've never won 20 games, never won a conference tournament game. I mean, there's so many things out there and so many goals that we want to achieve, and we're slowly getting into place, and I think we're ready. Year three is always a big year for coaches, no matter what sport. After your first year, the honeymoon phase, your second year, you get some recruits in. That third year, you really want to win. If you can do good that third year, typically your program's in good shape, and we feel we will.
Hey, Joe, Alex White here, UNLV alum. A lot of respect for Marvin Menzies. Great coach, great person. I assume that's why you are teaming up with him once again.
No question. We've been friends over 30 years. When he went ahead and took this job, I was excited. I wish I was at UNLV a little longer. I got there year three. I really wish I was there year one. Who knows what could have happened? I wish I was part of it. But unfortunately, when Tubby Smith calls and says you're going to Memphis with him, you don't hang up and say no. So it was great, and he's been doing great. Marvin's enjoying Kansas City. He probably likes the barbecue more than anything.
There you go. I saw the schedule for the KC Ruse. You guys certainly got aggressive, so the non-con's damn good.
Yeah, it is good. And you know what? We're playing a bunch of UNLV former coaches. We got TJ. We're playing Iowa State.
Yep.
TJ was happy to play. And we got our boy over at Bowling Green, Todd.
Yeah.
So we got former UNLV coaches all over our season, and we're looking forward to that. And we feel like it's good to play tough games early, makes you stronger for the conference. So that's going to be exciting.
You guys have Creighton too, right?
Yeah, we got Creighton, and that's a tough one to play. But, you know, it's local for our fans. You know, Omaha's not that far. It's a game that would be good. And also we got Wichita State, another good game locally, not too far. Anytime you can drive, get a check, and drive home, it's a good game for our level.
Joe Esposito, Coach Joe, Joe knows, was our basketball insider for a long time. Of course, a former assistant with the Rebels, now out here in Kansas City. That's where I am for the next couple of days doing Cofield and Company. So, Joe, you're a big sports fan. You know, you're originally a New York area guy, but you've been all over the place. Give me the feel for Kansas City as a sports city.
You know, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. This city absolutely is one of the best that I've ever lived in, and I've lived all over 12 different places, and it's just great to see how they embrace their teams, and that's one of the things that we want them to do with us. Obviously, the Chiefs, probably the top dog. You know, what they've done the last 2 years, I mean, Taylor Swift is all over this city now. Pat Mahomes is legendary here. Every single house has a Chiefs banner on game day. I mean, if you're outside cutting your grass and there's a Chiefs game going on, you better be careful that somebody doesn't pull out a gun and take you out, because they love their Chiefs. I mean, it is just an unbelievable atmosphere. And then they're loving the Royals. Like, the Royals are a big piece here, too. They're in a playoff race right now. They love the Royals. Everywhere you go in town, there's something with Bobby Witt. I mean, it's a great team. They're doing well. They're chasing Cleveland. They're only four games back. And that's another great team here. And then we have good soccer. You know, we've got really good soccer. I don't know if you know, but Brittany Mahomes is part owner of the women's team out here called The Current. Then we also have a guys' team out here in soccer, professional soccer team, that's really done well. So it's a great atmosphere. They love their sports, and we're glad we could be a part of it.
I was going to bring up Bobby Witt Jr., actually. Young baseball player really making his name this year in the MLB. Have you been out to a Royals game yet?
Yeah, you know, I've been to many. I've been to many. Every time someone comes into town and visit us, we go out there, and the atmosphere is great. You know, there's a lot of controversy about taking the stadium down and moving it to downtown. And I love Kauffman. It's a great place to go watch a game. It's a lot of history there with George Brett. And, I mean, there's just so much that happened. I don't like the Royals, to be honest with you. They beat my Mets in 2015. So I don't like the Royals, but I do like the atmosphere and going there. And you got to like it. Hey, Cofield, you got to love it, man. The Mets are rolling, and the Jets, not a good start, but we're going to be fine this year.
They'll be okay. Let's not panic too early. Let us have a little bit of hope, right? That's one of the best teams in the NFL, the Niners. Coach Joe's with us. Joe Esposito is with the Kansas City Roos now, coaching in the Summit League with former Rebel head coach Marvin Menzies. I want to go back to college basketball for a second. Can you put into perspective what Dan Hurley just did? I think now having consistency and having back-to-back years, you know, winning championships is harder than it's ever been because of the roster constantly in flux.
No question. No question. The way that programs have changed, you know, you're getting so many new guys every year. Guys are leaving schools after 1 year. In order to keep a consistent team makes it difficult. And then it's a lot of these are going to the best, the highest bidder, you know, whoever has the most money. I think that's why some of these coaches, older coaches, have now gotten out of the game, because they don't want to deal with it. I know Nick Saban was one of the guys that didn't want to deal with all the money and who's doing what. And I mean, it's just sad that it's come to that point, but he's done an unbelievable job at UConn, keeping some of those players there, bringing in the right players, and then turning down the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers were ready to open up their pocketbook and get them to coach, you know, in the pros, but sometimes that's not that, you know, appealing to a college guy, because you got to deal with egos, you got to deal with all sorts of things. But to be honest with you, he may be able to do it again. Like, he's that good. He's got a formula that works at UConn. It's a great place to play. It's a great fan base. And what he's done, I don't know if it could happen again, to be honest with you, in my lifetime, that team's going to repeat with all this change in the portal and the NIL and everything else.
Were you surprised when he turned down that Lakers job?
You know, a little bit I was. But to be honest with you, I thought, like, he loves being in stores. He loves living in stores. He loves the college game. I just thought, like, does he want to deal with LeBron? Like, the guy that coached the Lakers before that has left, Darvin Ham, he actually played at Texas Tech. You know, I was at Texas Tech for many years, and his son played for us. and their strength coach is also a guy that I worked with at Memphis. And I just feel like hearing all the stories about the difference and the changes with the NBA and how hard it is and the travel and being away from home and just all the things that come into it, you got to be really dedicated to do something like that, especially leaving a program like UConn. Now, if the Lakers offered me the job, you better believe I'm going to take it. But for him, I think it was a good decision for him to stay in the college game. He's the best at it, and I think they're going to do great this year.
All right, Joe, we got to close on this one. I'm going to lean on you as a food expert, although I'm questioning it right now because you look like you're down to about 175 weight-wise. You lost a lot of weight. But you know how to eat. You've got good taste. I'm not going to ask you barbecues because I already know Kansas City, your choice is, Q39. I wanted to ask you, this is a town that is steeped in history, sometimes maybe not the right history with the guys with the crooked noses with Italian food. You got an Italian joint you found so far in Kansas City in your short time here?
Do I ever. Garazzo's.
Really?
Unbelievable downtown. They've got the best Sicilian artichoke you've ever had in your life.
Really?
It's got cheese in it. It's got shrimp. Every single leaf you pull out of that artichoke, there's a shrimp sticking on that sucker. You want a reservation there, you call me. My paisans will take care of you. We'll get you in there. Steve, you'll have the best meal you've ever had. It's better than Vegas Capo. Capo's my favorite in Vegas. This place is off the chain. You'll absolutely love it.
My God, what an endorsement. Garazzo's. Okay, I'll look into it. Hey, Joe, it was good catching up with you. Hopefully we get you on soon, and good luck this season if I don't talk to you, and I'll certainly see you down at the Final Four.
That'd be awesome. All right, miss you guys.
There he is. We miss Coach Joe. Joe Esposito was on the staff of Marvin Menzies at UNLV and is helping rebuild the KC Ruse. We got a big event coming up in less than a week now. It's next Tuesday. It's our Bikini Tug of War. It's at the Plaza Pool. It's the 11th year we've done this. It's part of the Steve Sear Summer Tour. Steve Sear is an officially documented Tug of War referee. I'm sure the Tug of War Association was thinking exactly of events like Bikini Tug of War, but he actually is official. At the Plaza that day, they're going to have bucket specials, margarita specials. It is another stop on the Steve Sear Summer Tour. It's the Plaza, 3 o'clock next Tuesday, weigh-ins at 2 o'clock. I'm telling you, it's a good competition. Peppermint Hippo, the defending champ. We got a bunch of other teams of three females going out of Tug of War in the pool, the Plaza, next Tuesday the 17th, the Bikini Tug of War, right here on ESPN Las Vegas with a live Cofield and Company on the scene at the Plaza.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Who wants to see that, especially after you had the ghost pepper?
Horoscope guy, Bernstein?
No.
Oh, God, no.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, you can, it always me, happens. You can call me Dan or you can call me Bernsey, but you don't know me like that.
Got it.
And he got you. And he's there with you.
Wait, I don't even know what the hell's happening. I thought the guy Dan Bernstein, who's a pretty legendary guy in Chicago doing radio, Griffin. Was he really mad? I didn't see the video. Or was there no video, just audio?
Oh, no, there was a video, and he was not thrilled one bit being called Bernstein.
Well, part of it might be, who is it some dude from Barstool or something who was guesting on the show?
Yeah, it's those Barstool cats. They always seem to kind of rub people the wrong way.
So he doesn't like being called Bernstein. Okay. All right. We'll delve into that one. We love radio wars. We love heat on the air. Alex White's with us. She's the company today. It's Cofield. I was just looking at the Italian joint in Kansas City that Joe Esposito recommended. The picture's out front. Oh, my God. Alex, of course, is with us as she's doing her regular gig at the South Point Studios. I've been to Don Vito's down at the South Point. More than solid. It's a good spot. Do you eat all the time at the South Point?
No. No, I do not eat
Take advantage of it. What are you doing?
But I have. I've tried almost every restaurant there. Very good.
All right. I got to get to a couple of Belichick notes, because I saw, I really don't like these odds when they come across. I get them on my email, and it's generally an offshore book that is booking a market for first NFL coach to be fired. I know this is going to sound cheesy, but I'm not exactly keen on rooting for people to get fired. I also think it's kind of a weird market, and I don't even know how you set the odds. But it plays into this one because there's a story out that Belichick wants to coach next year and he'll reportedly be, quote, choosy. Pro Football Talk said This implies he'll actually have choices. Will he? I think he will have choices. I think the word choosy is kind of strong, Alex, because I don't know that he's going to have, you know, his choice of every job in the National Football League that's open, because this last time around, there was only one organization to really kick the tires, and even they kind of laughed at him and mocked and chided him. So I think a year on TV is going to help Belichick, but I don't know that he's going to have seven offers to pick from.
I'd have to agree with that. Maybe at least a few, though. I mean, the way that this year is starting, there's a couple organizations who could definitely use a complete change in there. I don't think Dable, though. I think they might give him another shot and like actually let him draft a quarterback. But looking down this list, there's a couple that I could see Belichick being able to go to.
Like?
Potentially, I don't know. Would he want to go to Jacksonville? Remember, too, we looked at this list before the season started probably about a month ago. And I was like, Doug Peterson is kind of far down there. And I think Trevor Lawrence is their guy, so I think it's going to fall on the coach. Where, as Dable, he might have a little way out if Daniel Jones doesn't start to play a lot better. But I don't know. He's not going to Dallas, right?
No. I don't think there's any way that's going to happen. I think it's very tricky, though, because if Belichick's going to be choosy, what does he covet more? Does he covet a team that's ready to go and win a Super Bowl, or does he covet having full control? Because if he covets full control, then I think the two best jobs that could be open are the Bills and the Eagles. He ain't getting full control. So can he swallow his pride and go, you know what, I want to be part of an organization. I don't have to have control of personnel. I just want to win. And then on the flip side, for teams, like I think the Giants would hire Belichick in a heartbeat, because right now they're in a pathetic state. And I don't think they're going to extend Dable. I think they're going to move on from him. And I think it's the greatest thing that has ever happened in Dable's life, that he gets the hell out from under the Mara ownership and Joe Shane, the GM, who I don't think is competent. But the other one, like when you mentioned Jacksonville, is it more important? Well, like, is it that important that he has control? So then he's going to have, I mean, that's not a complete rebuild, because Trevor Lawrence is solid and could be great. I just wonder what he wants, and then will it be a match for the other organization, because, or for the organization, because his reputation is he's a tough guy to deal with. Like, how desperate are you to just hand over your entire organization to Belichick?
If I had to make a bet right now, I would bet that he cares more about having control.
Damn. So he's going to coach until he's like 78, too. That's the other thing. He could walk into a couple of jobs and have a chance to win right away. He may take jobs because he can get full control, and he's going to have a five-year build, and by the time they arrive, he's 77 years old.
Valid point with that. They may never arrive either.
That seems crazy to me. Make sure you visit our good friends, Ellis Island Casino, Hotel, and Brewery. Family-owned spot since 1968. Trust me, I've tried every nook and cranny of that place. They offer everything. Eat, drink, sing, sleep, play. And it's right there near the Strip on Koval and Flamingo. They've got Oktoberfest. It's a really big deal. On September 21st, Front Yard kicking off Oktoberfest with a live band, special menu, and beer specials. And if you're, I don't even know if you have to be big and strong. I think there's an expertise to being able to hold the stein, the giant glass mug. They're doing a stein holding contest at 7 o'clock on the 21st. They've got a cash prize for that one. And it's free entry to get in, live band. The band goes from 7 to 10. It's all happening at Ellis Island Casino, Hotel, and Brewery. Oktoberfest, it kicks off on September 21st.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
Whoever reported that I told the band not to play the fight song, that's idiotic. Y'all know that. Like, when you saw that, you know that was a lie. We got to start having some kind of accountability. Thankful for many of y'all that take your job and your craft serious. And consequently, you get facts before you run with false narratives.
Yeah, Deion and the Buffs, super funny off the field, but I don't know, is it funny on the field or just kind of sad? I mean, it's early. They could still bounce back. Shador, if engaged, could lead them to 8 or 9 wins, but the way it's unfolding, and I think the way it's going to unfold this week, is about what I predicted. Caleb Herring is in. He played college football. He played for lots of different coaches. He watches college football. The Buff story, the way it's unfolding, is really interesting. And I know you didn't like something at the end of the game, right, Caleb, in terms of the buy-in from the starting quarterback when things were, you know, the chips were down?
Yeah, I, you know, the quarterback has a responsibility to be the leader in all circumstances. And with the understanding, you're going to take the blame. You're going to take accountability, win or lose. You're going to get too much credit or you're going to get too much blame. And that's a part of the position. And we've known that for years, right? That's not new. So when I see a quarterback leaving the field 2 minutes before the game's over, and this is at any level, much less college, but at any level, that just does not feel like the leadership that a quarterback should display for so many reasons. And I think there's pretty obvious. And then to follow it up with a press conference that seems very deflective as far as taking the blame. And, you know, I've been a guy sitting in a press conference getting questions thrown at me with the understanding that there's so much more to this team game that that is out of my control. But having to sit there and take the blame, and because it's the right thing to do, that's what the leader is supposed to do. I think it's hard to, for a guy that I think is talented. This is not an accusation that Shador Sanders is not one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best on the field quarterback that we have in college football today. But that moment for him was not a bright one that he'll look back on, and hopefully he's been coached and counseled and bothered about that. Because I don't think it was a good look for him and what he aspires to be as a leader. And believe it or not, you know, some people think that his celebrity may be bigger than the speculation, but that can hurt him when it comes draft time. And when these guys are trying to pick the quarterback of the future, the franchise leader, things like that, I think could be a detriment to where he falls in the draft or what teams are going to take a chance with him. But it just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't like to see that from quarterbacks. Especially though, quarterbacks who already have a narrative around them, as Deion Sanders kind of alluded to. They're chasing narratives. You make it really easy to create a narrative about Sanders and the Sanders family when you do stuff like that.
Caleb Cofield was just talking about it. It doesn't look good for the Buffs at all. Now they're playing their in-state rival in Colorado State. We saw what happened last year. But Colorado, I mean, they have the same problems as last year again. The O-line, they can't run the ball. How do you think this game is going to go against Colorado State?
I think it's going to be similar to last year's game. I think this is going to be a shootout where the skill positions have, you know, the biggest say in things. 30-plus points on both sides, I would assume, and not a lot of handoffs. But I think, like with every game, whoever can control the trenches at the end of things will be able to come away with the game. And it's not, you know, putting up 200 yards rushing. It's when it's third and two, can I get 2 yards? That's, I think, what's going to decide this game. I think this is a pick'em game. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole if I was a better, but I'm not. So I'm excited to watch it. I don't know that Colorado football is not a train wreck. I don't know that they'll actually win games. But the storyline that is Deion Sanders is worth watching. And this is one of those games that is for sure worth watching anytime there's a rivalry game. But I think, you know, what they did last year, I think there'll be a lot of eyes tuned in to what happens in this one.
Let's go to the NFL. Let's talk Caleb Williams and maybe some things that you didn't love in his debut in terms of bad habits.
I think one of the things, the big concerns on the field, that obviously Caleb Williams getting drafted number one, there was some off-the-field chatter about who he was as a leader and if he was mature enough. That's neither here nor there. I think you put a lot of that to bed with Hard Knocks. But the on-the-field stuff that was a concern was the way he extended plays in college in a way that was seen as highlight reel material. And would he try to do that in the pros? And I tell you what, Patrick Mahomes does it sometimes, and it looks like it's, you know, the way to win games. But I can tell you from experience, and you know, anybody who's played quarterback at a high level will tell you, you can't rely on that kind of playmaking and randomness to get you wins. And I think I saw a little bit of Caleb Williams in his young career kind of leaning on those things, holding on to the ball too long, taking a huge unnecessary sack, and not really getting to his first progression quickly enough, getting to a play that gave him free access quick enough. So looking for the home run ball, I think, was a concern with Caleb Williams. And he just played within a structure. And that's part of the reason why I thought Jaden Daniels had a chance to be a more successful rookie campaign, because he showed that he could do that. And I think he did have if you look at the individual performance, he had a better game than Caleb Williams. Obviously, Caleb Williams got credit for the win, and it's very strange to say Caleb Williams won the game because he didn't do very much to actually win the game. But the Bears did win, and there's a lot of eyes on Caleb Williams, so we'll see if he learns from that going forward. Hopefully that teach film will – it's his first full game, obviously, so there's a lot to learn from, and hopefully he does that.
moving to another quarterback in the league. Thursday Night Football did not disappoint with the Ravens and the Chiefs, especially coming down to the end there where that last touchdown did not count because of the toe. But I'm curious on your thoughts on Lamar Jackson, who rushed for 122 yards, Derrick Henry just 46. So we're seeing the old Lamar where they tried to get away from him running so much. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, first of all, the NFL scripted that beautifully, right? It almost like they wanted that to happen in the Thursday night opener for the season. But I think Lamar Jackson is a cold dude getting back to his ways. That's a Drake reference for the boomers out there who can catch it. Sorry, Steve. But I think Lamar Jackson is back to his running ways, which I think makes him the most dangerous quarterback. I don't know that he's going to ever be the most elite passer, but when he adds that dual threat, when he's making plays with his legs, I think he opens so much up. I don't know if it's sustainable, and that was the worry for the Ravens, and I think that's why you bring a Derrick Henry in to try to take the burden off of him to use his legs. But because they got down, and because of the style of play, because the offensive line for the Ravens was not full strength, it was not handling the defensive line of the Ravens, I don't think Derrick Henry was able to get going. So I see that changing a little bit, but Lamar Jackson playing the way he played is why he's one of the most valuable players to ever play the game. And obviously he missed a couple throws at the end of the game that he wishes he had back, but everybody else in football is afraid of Lamar Jackson when he's on that mission. We saw what he did when he destroyed the league in his first MVP season. He struck fear into the opponent, and I think he's getting back to that this year. He has something to prove, especially when you look at his comments on the kryptonite, the Kansas City Chiefs kryptonite. I think he has a chip on his shoulder. And as the reigning MVP of the league, it's strange for him to have a chip on his shoulder. I like Lamar getting back to his ways.
Let's talk a little Tyreek Hill. Obviously, you have a lot of perspective on this. There's certainly the racial aspect of it. There's also the law enforcement side of it. I mean, what do you think about what Tyreek Hill did, how it was handled, and how it's been handled since?
I think it's been handled kind of poorly since. I think it's almost like it's trying to drum up every time to like reignite some narratives that don't really accept accountability on either side of the issue, right? Whether it's Tyreek Hill downplaying his role in how things escalated, or you know, the law enforcement community kind of rallying around the behavior as if any sort of actions by a suspect or a victim is justification for going overboard and not being the professional in the situation. So I think that's the main thing I take away from it, the narrative creation immediately after it, and this is kind of the poison of social media, immediately after. There was, you know, he was going 100 miles an hour and all this stuff, reckless driving. You know, we made the comparison to what we experienced here in Las Vegas with athletes, high-profile athletes, speeding and having involvement. Very similar vehicle, too, which just made it even worse for this whole narrative. But I think once the facts came out and once, you know, everything was cooler heads prevail, I think you'll understand that there are some facts to this that everybody can learn from. Drivers can obviously learn how to interact with police and have the respect for authority that's appropriate and deserved by the badge. And the badge needs to have an understanding of what is tolerable and what is necessary and what your professional role is in these situations. And obviously de-escalation is the word that comes to mind. But this was one of those situations that could have been easily avoided by asking the right questions, maintaining your composure and handling yourself professionally on both sides of this. I think there's fault on both sides, and it can't be so divisive that we can't acknowledge that both parties may have been at fault in what was ultimately a stain on the ledger of law enforcement and professional athletes alike.
Now a short week and then hosting division rivals Buffalo Bills on Thursday. In your opinion, does this affect the Dolphins on the field at all?
I don't think so. I think, they played a game immediately after. I think if anything, it would have affected them that game. I think Tyreek Hill shook it off. He got a touchdown, even, I think, kind of inappropriately made light of it on the field. But I think it's kind of one of those things that these are professional athletes. They'll play football when football happens. And football becomes the escape more than anything in these kind of situations where you start to appreciate the game more. You start to, you know, honor your position as a professional athlete, the ability to go out and do this and not, you know, be in a situation where you may have unfortunately, you know, gone in the complete wrong direction and became a lethal situation. So I think the guys in the locker room have showed that they, you know, they appreciate their opportunity as athletes and they are thriving on the ability to go out and play to escape from the noise. So I think the game will kind of quiet things down for them And once everybody gets back to their normal routine and the players get back to football, I think they'll be fine. There won't be any lasting impact from this.
Caleb Herring's on Cofield & Company. He's one of the co-hosts of the Barry Odom radio show. It goes down tonight right after us, 6 o'clock. It's every Wednesday. It's at 215 in Flamingo. That's the Parkway Tavern at 215 in Flamingo. $2 on the Miller Lights during the show between 6 and 7, and a great spot to watch football on game days, $5 shots and drafts, $6 cocktails. Weekdays, breakfast, ooh, buy one, get one. That goes from 7 to 11 a. All right, let's hit on the Rebels before we get you out of here, and then 60 minutes of Rebels talk again is coming up after 6 o'clock. Listen, they're going against a Kansas team that threw for nearly 450 on them, had a bunch of long touchdowns, rolled up some really big plays. So what's the key for the Rebels on defense to slow down Kansas this time around? Is it better scheme or better personnel?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the personnel has definitely had some changes and adjustments to match up against a team like Kansas. But I think it's discipline to the scheme. And I wouldn't say the scheme necessarily needs to be better. I think it needs to be adhered to a little bit tighter. And I think on a broad basis, everybody needs to be on the same page. The way that Kansas plays with motions and shifts and eye candy before the snap, they try to make you get out of your assignment, technique, and alignment. And I think they took advantage of that a lot last year. Keep in mind, this is a Kansas team that's returning. All of the receivers that made big plays last year against the Rebels in the bowl game are back. And so they're going to have some familiar faces. I know Cam Oliver probably had the bone to pick with the receivers, and the receivers probably are envious that Cam Oliver got two interceptions on him in the third quarter last year. So there's going to be a lot of storylines to follow, but I think the meat and potatoes of it is, can UNLV limit the explosive plays, and can they control the line scrimmage? Devin Neal has not gotten enough attention, I think, because he is a stellar running back. He's probably the second-best running back that the Rebels will face this year behind Ashton Jeanty. So I think his ability to hurt them on the ground, coupled with explosive plays, you can't give Kansas a two-way go offensively, and I think that's going to be the focus. If it's any indication, based on what we've talked about so far this season, UNLV is really focused on the explosive plays, so I think they'll try to put a lid on that and trust their front seven to stop the run.
Caleb, I got 30 seconds left. I see Dylan Raiola is getting a lot of attention for being a Mahomes clone. I'm going to go Matt Sluka, Richie Cunningham, unless I can find another redhead. Are you into the whole Raiola Mahomes thing?
It was cute and funny at first. It was a good laugh. But at this point, it's like plagiarism. I don't know what it's called when you mimic a person, but he's stealing his identity is what he's doing. And he's probably making money off of it. His NIL value has probably gone up because of this. It's getting ridiculous. I think I'm more annoyed with it now than I was before. I think Patrick Mahomes has a legit beat. This guy is capitalizing off of my name and image and likeness. So it has to be stopped.
All right, Caleb. We'll hear from you in just a little bit. Thanks for checking in, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
There he is, the former Rebel quarterback. Barry Odom Radio Show is coming up live at Parkway Tavern. Get out there and see it. It's 215, check that, 215 and Flamingo. It's a 6 o'clock start. If you can't, it's going to be right here on ESPN Las Vegas.